Welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth. My name is Vishal Tekshanani. I'm NabTrade's Customer Insights Manager, and today we're going to break down the fundamentals of superannuation, a topic we often talk about in this podcast, what it is, how it works, and what part it can play in your future. I'm talking with Gemma Dale, the usual host of this program, who is NabTrade's Director of SMSF and Investor Behavior. She's worked in this field for a long time, so I couldn't think of a better expert to educate us on superannuation. Gemma, thanks so much for joining me. How are you?
Thanks, Vish. I'm well, thank you.
That's great. So Gemma, let's start off with the absolute basics. What is superannuation and why does it exist?
So superannuation, we're very familiar with the term, but it is actually a trust structure under the law. And it's a very specific type of trust that exists for the sole purpose of providing its beneficiaries, known as members, with an income stream for their retirement and in their retirement. Super has existed in Australia for nearly a century now, believe it or not. So we all think it started in 1992, but that was when the legislation required employers to contribute, all employers to contribute. It's been around forever. It's been around since before the age pension, believe it or not. And it's one of the pillars of retirement policy in Australia.
Okay, so it exists solely for providing for people's retirement. How does that work in practice?
Yeah, good question. So as I said, it's a trust structure, and the way it operates is that you or your employer makes a contribution to the fund you belong to, makes many contributions to the fund that you belong to, and these are preserved or held on trust for you until you retire. Now, the way they determine whether or not you've retired is determined under the law, and they use what are called conditions of release, which are a set of rules that that determine when you can access your super benefits. So these are retiring permanently from the workforce after reaching your preservation age, which I'll go into in a minute, leaving any job after you turn 60, or turning 65. 65 is known as the universal condition of release. Once you turn 65, all of your superannuation benefits are available to you. There are some other conditions which apply that don't relate specifically to retirement, but do allow you to access your super. So if you become totally and permanently disabled, if you contract a terminal illness, God forbid, and there are also hardship provisions and compassionate grounds. So people in very extreme circumstances can also access their superannuation, and if you die, that is also unfortunately one of the ways that superannuation can be accessed.
Okay, so your super is locked up until you retire for the most part. You mentioned the preservation age. What is that?
Okay, so your preservation age is predetermined. For those who were born before the 1st of July 1960, their preservation age was age 55. So this idea that you reached 55, you retired, and then you could access your superannuation, that's fine. Really important to note, there are some anomalies, right? So some super funds exist outside these rules. Some, very few, but some. A lot of the government funds, so if you're an employee of the government, you may have different rules. If you have a defined benefit fund, you may have different rules. So this is the legislation that's prescribed that covers everybody in general. There may be some specific funds that are a bit different. So just be aware of that. But for the average person, if you were born before the 1st of July 1960, then your preservation age was 55. For those born on or after the 1st of July 1964, it's age 60. So for most younger, well, for younger people in general, age 60 you need to be before you retire and access your super. And for those born between those two dates, it's just an increasing amount or increasing age. So when people talk about the retirement age in Australia increasing, and it's been a bit of a political football lately, it's worth being aware that retirement age isn't a single thing. There are different retirement ages depending on which part of the legislation or people's behaviour you're looking at. There is the age at which people actually retire, like actually leave the workforce. And for women, that's actually in their 50s, well below when they can access their super, depending on their situation, on average. And for men, it's been increasing over time, and women, it's increasing over time. So they're the choices that people make, and they're determined by their personal circumstances. There's the age at which you can access your super, after you've retired. And there were those three dates I mentioned. So there's your preservation age. There's the age at which you can access super having left any job, which is 60. And then there's also the universal condition of release, which is 65. If you keep working after 65 and you haven't retired, that's fine. You can still access your super. There is also the pension age, which is a completely separate part of the legislation. And the pension age is now increasing to 67. Mm. So you've got this situation where you may retire at 55. You might not be able to access your super till you're 57. You may not get tax-free super till you're 60. You may not get the pension until you're 65.
Wow.
So retirement age is a variety of different things to different people.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so if your funds are locked up for all this time, why would anyone invest in super?
So I've had this question a lot of times. It sounds like a silly question. I've had it a heap of times from people. I do understand it, but there are two really good reasons. One is it's compulsory, so you don't have a choice. Compulsory, then that's it, you're in. And that legislation, as I said, was originally brought in 1992 and has been really effective in ensuring that Australians have some retirement savings. The other is that the government offers, and this is both sides of government, they change a bit over time, but both sides of government offer significant incentives to people to invest in superannuation. One is sort of on the tax side, and then the other is sort of additional benefits like co-contributions and so on. So lots and lots of different things you can get. The holy grail of the concessions of superannuation, so the holy grail of being in it in the first place, is what happens to it once you retire, and particularly once you retire over the age of 60, which is it becomes tax-free.
Right.
So if you start an income stream in particular, so you start an account-based pension, the usual type of income stream, after age 60 and you retire, all income and all capital gains from that income stream, assuming you haven't gone over your cap, so there's a limit of about $1.6 million at the moment.
Is 0% tax?
Is 0% tax. Okay. That's exactly it. No capital gains tax, no income tax, nothing. That's pretty incredible compared to your personal situation. So that's the holy grail of being in super, and that's the benefit of being invested in it in the first place. And that's why people lock their money up for all that time.
Okay, so you have to wait till you're retired, but tax-free assets, they do sound pretty good.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So it's worth noting most elements of retirement income and most elements of older Australians' financial situation is pretty concessionally treated. So they have the senior Australians' tax offsets and so on that make their income much more concessionally treated than someone who's still working, much more, even when it's not in superannuation. But that totally tax-free environment is pretty incredible. That's pretty attractive to people. There's quite a bit of complexity around it, right? You've got to make sure you get it all right. But once you've got it sorted, it's very nice.
Okay. So Gemma, you pointed out that one of the reasons people invest in super is, well, because they have no choice.
Yeah.
It is compulsory. So can you explain how that works?
Sure. So in Australia, we have what's called the superannuation guarantee. You do get people calling it the superannuation guarantee charge. That's not what it is. The superannuation guarantee charge is when employers don't pay it, and then they get a fine from the government or a penalty from tax office. So it's not the guarantee charge. It's just the superannuation guarantee.
Right.
And this is a superannuation contribution that all employers are required to make on behalf of their employees. Started in 1992, as I mentioned, at 2% of an employee's wage, and it's still increased to 9.5% now. It was 9% for a long time. It's been legislated to increase to 10% in 2021 and 12% in 2025, but it's bounced around a lot politically, this one. So sit tight, assume 9.5% for now. I don't know whether that legislation will change again. I think many people assume that that's probably not as locked in as you might hope. So assume 9.5%. Your employer must make that contribution on your behalf at least quarterly.
Yep.
And you're able to choose your own fund. So when you start with a new employer or at any point during your employment, you can choose a new fund. Again, be aware if you're in a defined benefit or something like that, then you need to think long and hard about that. You may not have as many options. People who work for the government, again, maybe not so many options. But there are an enormous range of super funds out there,
right,
and your employer will pay into the one that you choose, and they will pay it in at least quarterly, and employers are obligated to make those contributions on your behalf. So this system where 9.5% of all employees' income goes into superannuation at least every quarter is the reason that Australia has such a really strong retirement system. So Australia is held up around the world as one of the most impressive retirement systems.
Yeah, wow.
Plenty other countries don't have any kind of compulsory saving. And in addition to that, is why we have the fourth largest funds management industry in the world, because all this money's flowing into it.
It's pretty impressive
the
for the population of our size, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it's astonishing. So it's not perfect, but it beats the hell out of not having a superannuation system.
Absolutely. So Gemma, you also mentioned tax concessions before retirement. What are those?
So yeah, it's a really good point you make. There are tax concessions that apply even on compulsory contribution. So the tax treatment of superannuation is largely the same for both compulsory contributions and voluntary contributions. And that is, so any contribution that goes into the superannuation system, it's accumulation phase, yeah, right? That comes from you or your employer where a tax deduction is claimed. So your employer will claim a deduction for any contribution they make, and you can also claim a deduction in certain circumstances as well for amounts that go in. They're taxed at 15 cents in the dollar on the way in. Now, many people don't like the idea of being taxed at all on the way in, but that beats the hell out of paying tax at your marginal rate for most people, because your personal marginal tax rate might be as high as 45 cents in the dollar, and you've got Medicare levy to think about. You only pay 15 cents in the dollar on the amount going into super, so that can be really attractive. It means you've got 85 cents in the dollar working for you when you invest it, rather than, let's say, 53 cents in the dollar if you're investing outside superannuation, for example. So you've got more money working for you, you've paid less tax, that could be very favourable. Once it's in there, any earnings in the fund in accumulation phase are taxed at a maximum of 15 cents in the dollar still. So this 15% tax rate is really important. Superannuation generally assume in accumulation tax rate capped at 15%, and capital gains tax, if the assets have been held for more than 12 months, is 10%. It's actually two-thirds of the amount is taxed at 15%, so 10%. Again, incredibly attractive compared to your personal marginal tax rate if you're a high income earner in particular. Now, it's a tough one for lower income earners, obviously. It's less attractive for them. But generally speaking, if you are a wage earner in Australia, superannuation has a lower tax rate than you do personally for money invested in your own name.
Okay, yeah, no, those tax benefits, those tax concessions certainly sound very attractive. So what about some of the other incentives you mentioned?
Well, this is probably a point I should make about the tax concessions. So there is a limit on how much money you can put into super on a pre-tax basis. Because it is so attractive and the people who are most attracted to it are high income earners. Mm. These people, there's two things that people need to watch out for. One is if you're a high income earner and you earn over $250,000 a year, you pay an extra contributions tax of 15%. So you actually pay 30 cents in the dollar on money going in, but still better than 45.
Still better than your individual tax rate. Yep.
Yeah, that's right. And it's only for those people earning over 250. So interestingly enough, a person earning over $180,000 a year has that 45 cents tax bracket. So people earning between 180 and 250, they actually get a very nice benefit, more so than someone who's earning over 250. Another little anomaly in the legislation. But this cap on how much you can put in on a pre-tax basis is very important. So the caps used to be based on your age, and they used to be very high as you got closer to retirement age. So it used to be, and this is more than 10 years ago, that you could contribute up to $100,000 a year, a bit more than that.
Yeah, wow.
Per employer, believe it or not, and claim a tax deduction for that. So you would find doctors, for example, who had multiple employment relationships because they might have a practice plus be employed by a hospital, could claim $100,000 for each of them and be claiming hundreds of thousands of dollars a year before pre-tax going into super. The cap now is $25,000 per annum for everybody. And you can only do it up to the age of 75, which is the other thing. And if you're between 65 and 75, you have to be working in order to make any contributions at all. So there's a whole lot of things to remember, but that $25,000 cap is the critical one, and that applies across all the different types of contributions you make on a pre-tax basis. So that is employer contributions, your super guarantee, any salary sacrifice you do, and any other personal deductions you claim a tax deduction for, 25 grand a year. Very different to how it used to be, so it's much more limited.
Okay, and any other incentives you want to go through?
Yeah, look, there's a number of other incentives. It's quite extensive, so I'm sort of going to list them and probably not go into too much detail simply because the requirements for each of them, and you've got to make sure you get the requirements right in order to be eligible, but they're all quite attractive in their own way. One that's worth noting is, as I said, people who are low income earners super's not that attractive for them, right? Because if you're paying 15 cents in the dollar for the money going in, and that's what you pay in your personal name, or you pay more, you pay less than that in your personal name, you may be worse off having the money in super. So they have a low income super contribution, which is designed to offset the tax payable on the amount going in. So that's not so much an incentive as just an equalisation provided by the government to ensure that low income earners aren't worse off when money goes into super on their behalf. The incentive side of things, though, there is some really cool stuff depending on your situation. So one is the co-contribution, again aimed at low-income earners, where the government will actually match contributions that you put into super on an after-tax basis. So this is when you make after-tax contributions, they will match that up to a certain limit. Low-income earners, that one's aimed at. There is a spouse contribution. So if your spouse is a lowish income earner, so below $40,000 a year, you can receive a tax rebate for making a contribution on their behalf. Again, lots of requirements to meet, but nice to get a tax rebate making a contribution. There are straight up after-tax contributions. So you can contribute up to $100,000 a year. Again, if you're over 65 and under 75, got to meet a work test in order to do it. But you can contribute this after-tax amount. You've already paid tax on that in your own personal name, so you don't pay any contributions tax when it goes in.
Yep.
Once it's in there, earnings tax is capped at 15 cents in the dollar. So for high income earners, this can be quite attractive. Many, many years ago, before there were caps on how much you could put in, you'd get people selling farms and 12 investment properties and this kind of stuff and putting millions of dollars into super just before they retired with the intention of getting all the retirement benefits that came with it, the tax-free super and so on. Because there are caps now, you've got to manage this much more carefully and plan a longer-term contribution strategy. You can't do it all last minute because of these limits.
Chuck it in at the last minute before retirement, okay.
Yeah, that's right. The only one where you can do a monster contribution just before you retire is the CGT cap. So it doesn't get talked about very much. This one is aimed at business owners, small business owners, so less than $6 million in assets generally, or $2 million in turnover. It is aimed at those people because generally speaking, they won't have been contributing through their working life because they're plowing all their money back into the business. So those people are able to sell a business and take the proceeds of that sale and throw it into superannuation in one big lump sum, well over $1 million. And if you've got a couple, that's well over $2 million that you can contribute. Now, if you are in this situation, please go and get advice immediately because you've only got a really limited window to do it and you've got to structure it right. But again, tax-free on that money for the rest of your life. Pretty cool.
Okay. Thanks, Gemma. So we talked about the structural part of superannuation, and it's clear that there's plenty of incentives to invest in super, but what are you actually investing in? A question that my friends always ask, I don't get where my money goes, so...
it's a really, again, such a good question, and nothing drives me more wild than when you see, like on the news, super funds return 12%. You're like, a super fund is just a vehicle. Yeah. So back to that point I made right at the beginning, it's just a trust. It's a special purpose trust, right? It exists for retirement purposes, but it's just a trust. So the underlying investments are what you choose them to be, or what the professional fund manager that you choose chooses them to be.
The default option.
It could be the default option, yeah, absolutely. So generally speaking, it will be a mix of assets for everyone. So there'll be some cash in there because they have to manage cash flows. There will usually be a large component of Australian equities. Yep. So Australian shares form the bulk of most super funds in Australia. Yep. There are various estimates as to how much the Australian Stock Exchange, is underpinned by superannuation, and its estimates as high as 30%. So super funds are driving very large amounts of the return of your Australian equity portfolio. Australian equities are driving a big part of your super portfolio while we're at it. So Australian equity is usually a big chunk. For the average person, property will be commercial property, listed property, that kind of thing that is invested in by a large professional fund manager. Mm. You will get the return from that. It'll be international equities. It'll be fixed income. It may be some alternative assets. There's lots and lots of different things that professional fund managers invest in. It is entirely up to you to find a fund manager who does what you want them to do as an investor in things that you want to be invested in. The alternative, if you've got enough money, is to think about a self-managed super fund where you choose every single asset yourself, or you can employ a professional through a self-managed super fund as well. So this idea that super is an asset is completely wrong. It's not an asset, it's a vehicle that invests in different types of asset classes, and you can choose what they are. So plenty of people will just choose a conservative option, for example, which is primarily cash, fixed income, very secure property assets for yield, not for growth, and then maybe a tiny bit of, you know, Australian and international equities to give a tiny bit of growth to the portfolio. Another person who's younger and got a long-term time frame, they'll be looking for equities. You choose what's right for you.
Excellent. That's a great segue into the next question, Gemma. So what tips do you have for people who are young and not very interested in managing their super so they can go about thinking about, you know, how do I maximize this for my retirement?
Yeah, it's a good question. I won't give away too much of your situation, Vish, but you're A, young, and B, motivated about your super, which I find very impressive.
Thank you.
So this is one where people sit on it for 10, 15 years and they miss so many opportunities. And it's a bit heartbreaking because compounding is still, you know, the greatest opportunity. It's the greatest strength you have on your side when you're young. So getting it right early, it doesn't have to be complex. You can do some really simple things. First of all, find out what you've got and where it is.
Yep.
So plenty of young people will have several different jobs. All employers will be contributing on their behalf. And if they haven't made an active choice about where it goes to a default option, as you mentioned. They will just have one that they just give the money to in the event that people don't make an active choice. The better option for you as an individual is to choose a fund you're comfortable with. It doesn't have to be a difficult choice. There are some great independent ratings providers and so on, who will say these are the top 10 funds in Australia based on what they charge, the kind of returns they get, and how well they look after their members. You just pick one of those. It's unlikely you would go far wrong. And this is what the Productivity Commission, ironically, who recently did a massive review of superannuation in general, recommended. 10 funds, and people just choose one of those. 10 high-quality funds, just pick one. So you can go and choose a high-quality fund, and every employer you go to can contribute to that fund on your behalf. The other thing you want to do is make sure that the asset allocation is right for you.
Yep.
So if you're happy taking some risk, you certainly have a long time frame if you're young, because you cannot touch it until at least 60 years of age, then you would think about having some growth assets in there. And sometimes it can be as simple as just picking the one that's called growth. they will generally call it growth or aggressive growth or something like that. Have a look at what's in it and ensure that you're comfortable with that. And if you're not comfortable, maybe do a bit of reading about it. But most funds make it pretty easy. Yep. It's just a matter of making some active choices when you're young. If you want to be really motivated, you can think about doing some co-contributions and so on when your income is lower and you can get advantages. But I appreciate that you're locking up your money for 40 years, which might not seem so attractive. The longer term benefits could be amazing though.
That's some great tips, Gemma. And can I say, you know, you mentioned I'm engaged with my super. This is a process I went through about 10 years ago when I was 22.
Ah, very show off.
So I went through, and this is not advice, but this is just what I did about 10 years ago. I looked at my super fund. I saw the fees I was paying and I thought, yeah, you know what? No, I'm going to move my money out of here. I looked at about 10, 20 different funds. It took a weekend. But it's not that hard to do.
I imagine the data is much more available now than it was 10 years ago as well. The internet's a wonderful thing.
Oh, absolutely. And I knew I wanted to have an aggressive allocation because I'm young. I'm not going to I'm not intending to touch this till my 60s. I picked the most competitive based on fee, but also insurance was a big thought for me. Having a competitive insurance premium and having an online option where I can move between different asset allocations quite easily. So, if you want to take a leaf from my book, I encourage you to do that type of research and what Gemma said. So,
and
then you can think about your strategies. So, when I then had the money, I do add to my concessional contributions. I do salary sacrifice extra on top of my paycheck. So some things that young investors can think about for sure.
I think the gorgeous thing about your example as well is you did it 10 years ago when you were 22. It hasn't required a huge amount of work since then. So it was a weekend. That's tough. But you know, that's a 10-year strategy. That's a really good investment of your time to get a vastly better outcome than someone who's got 10 different funds when they're 32 and they don't know where they are and they don't know what fees they're paying and they didn't have the right asset allocation. Because you do need to be a bit careful. Some employers, the default option will be conservative or cash. Most will do something like balanced, but that may still be too conservative for someone who's 22 and has all that kind of time frame up their sleeve. So have a look at them. But that's a brilliant example.
Excellent. And what about for more mature members who are larger balances, they're nearing retirement? What are some of the things they can think about?
So this is really important. I'm going to use the example of someone sort of later 40s, let's say early 50s. These are often your peak earning years. Depends on your life circumstances. They may also be your peak spending years if you've still got kids at home and so on and big mortgage. But they are often your peak earning years, and they are the years that all of those different tax and other concessions that I was talking about become incredibly attractive. You've still got 10 years plus until you can access this money. That is a long-term time frame and a great opportunity to use compounding to grow your balance really fast. Again, my point about not having those higher caps is really important. So it used to be if you could salary sacrifice $100,000 a year in your last 5 years before retirement, you were set. Now, because it's $25,000 a year, you don't have that option. So thinking about it in your mid to late 40s, early 50s, whatever it might be, start thinking about what you can do. There's an amazing amount of incredibly high quality information on the internet. The tax office has great information, believe it or not. They've got videos, they've got transcripts for the videos, they've got lots of cool stuff. The ASIC website is also very good. So they have a FIDO website, which is very good at Money Smart, I think it's called now. I'm giving away my age again. they keep changing all the names of everything. That's also very good. There are a lot of calculators and different tools you can use to show the impact of using some of the strategies, even if you just start by contributing an extra $30 a week. Or, to your point, checking you're not paying too much in fees, making sure all your funds are consolidated. You may just be starting from scratch and doing the things that someone who's 22 could be doing. Or you may not be. You may be well along the path. You might be thinking about a self-managed super fund. You might be thinking about lots of different stuff. But engaging at that point is so powerful because you still have a good 10 years to build up as much as possible before you retire. And that is a huge difference between the people I used to see when I worked with financial planners who would come to you at sort of 57, 58, they want to retire in 2 years' time, and there's much less you can do at that point.
Okay, Gemma, thank you so much for your time. I think you covered the structural elements of superannuation brilliantly and also gave some food for thought to listeners about how they can go about thinking about their superannuation, maximizing it for retirement so that they can live very, very comfortably. As always, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Your Wealth. We always love to hear from you. So if you have any feedback or suggestions for future topics, please just email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au. I'm Vishal Tekshinani. Thanks for joining us. And thanks, Gemma.
Thanks, Vish.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.